is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
I am Jeff Smith, the Rogue announcer, and this is Rogue Talk for May 17th, 2019. And I am so happy to be back behind the microphone today. We were preempted last week for a good reason. We were covering the baseball doubleheader. We thought we were covering a softball doubleheader, but schedules got changed and we shifted over to the baseball games and had a fun time there. You can call the show if you'd like to call today. We're going to be primarily focused on all kinds of things going on at Rogue River Junior Senior High School with the school year wrapping up here in the next few weeks. There's all kinds of things to talk about, from sports, FFA. We've got new members of the National Honor Society. We've got all kinds of things to talk about. And so we're going to do that today. And I've got Hunter Arnsdorf in studio with me. He's going to help me with some of that. And so if you'd like to call the show, you can do that at 541-299-0498, 541-299-0498. And you can also email me here in the studio, feedback@943thebridge.com. If you put Rogue Talk in the subject line, those will come right to my inbox. And you can also visit us on Facebook. Search Rogue Talk on Facebook and like us there on Facebook and follow along. We try and keep you updated of what we're doing on the show and, you know, some various updates of what's going on with some of the friends of the show. So let's take a look at some things going on in the news before we get to all of our Rogue River High School things that we're going to talk about today. Of course, one of the big things in the news this week is the investigation of the investigation of President Trump, or candidate Trump and then President Trump. And the Attorney General has started an investigation of the entire, not just the Mueller investigation, but the FBI, all the work that the FBI and even the CIA was involved with. There's been a lot of stuff coming out on this. There's been some interesting interviews. Trey Gowdy was on Fox News this week and said a few interesting things and alluded to some things that I don't think a lot of people knew about. Also, some other interviews on other outlets where some different names were mentioned. You know, we've known that the infamous dossier was the Steele dossier because of the former British spy that supposedly put it together. Was of course named Steele, and that's why it's the Steele dossier. But we're finding out this week that it may not be the Steele dossier. It may not all be Steele's information, and in fact, there may be a link to a story that goes all the way back several years ago. There was a story put out that has a lot of similarities to the story that they've been trying to paint about the Trump organization, and the one connection to that, well, the article was written by Glenn Simpson, and it was alluded to earlier in the week that the dossier may have, at least in part, have been written by Glenn Simpson and not by Steele. And the connection to that is Manafort. There was an article written years ago. I want to say it was in 2007. Excuse me, but I don't have the article in front of me, about Paul Manafort, who of course has gotten into all kinds of legal troubles due to the Mueller investigation, but none of them really related to to Trump and Russian collusion and all of that. But because the original story was about connections in Russia and some other things, was written years ago, well, there's a lot of similarities to the story that they were trying to paint for the last 2.5 years. And losing my voice here, just getting started and I already have no voice, but Representative Nunes was interviewed this week, and he was the one that alluded to the fact that the dossier, at least parts of it, may have nothing to do with Steele. And so this investigation, I think, is where the real story is. Of course, we went 2.5 years without any collusion, without, you know, the idea of obstruction of justice. It's a little tough to obstruct justice if you know you're innocent of the thing that you're being investigated for. So you would have no reason to obstruct justice. And, you know, the Trump administration gave all the documents that they were asked for. They allowed all the witness testimony with the exception of the president himself not being interviewed. And they really didn't start trying to hold things back until Congress started trying to do their own investigation. Apparently, Congress doesn't trust the FBI. They apparently don't trust the IRS because they're trying to get all of the president's tax returns, and I'm not sure what kind of expertise they can add to those tax returns that the IRS doesn't already possess. But, you know, interesting, I guess. But now, you know, Mueller was the big hero for 2.5 years. He was gonna bring down this president and show that he, you know, cheated on the election and that he was terrible, and none of that happened. But Congress thinks that they're so smart that they can find things that Robert Mueller couldn't find with like 20 investigators over a 2.5 year period. So that part of it is all really kind of stupid. But when all of this shakes out and all the facts are known, I think I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it on this show. I may have said it on Once for All, you know, many weeks ago. I said the real story is going to be the collusion with the Russians between the Clinton campaign and between the Obama administration. And we're starting to see some of those facts kind of filter out here as time goes on. And if this story is interesting to you as it is to me, I would suggest that you follow wherever you listen to podcasts. Go and find the Dan Bongino show. He's been covering this for months and months, and every day it seems like there's some new information, and he covers that on his show. So I would suggest you go check that out if you're interested in that. But the real corruption and the real problems related to all this are actually starting to come out now, and they really don't have anything to do with Trump or the Trump campaign or the Trump administration, but they definitely do have some connections to many members of the Obama administration and the way that they were trying to surveil the president and his campaign, and even possibly his presidency, his transition. There's some interesting things about the people that were chosen from the FBI or the CIA to be a part of the transition team. They chose people that wouldn't normally be chosen for those posts. And so all of this is really interesting. Where it all leads, it's hard to say. I don't know how long that the Attorney General Barr's investigation will take. But if you want Watergate level scandal, you're not going to find it with the Trump administration or the Trump campaign, but you very well may find it when this investigation is over. So I will be watching closely, and I'm sure a lot of you will too, because it's when you're talking things on the level of Watergate, you're talking about pretty serious malfeasance and misfeasance and however you want to term it. And I'm going to be paying close attention. So another thing that has been in the national news lately, you're getting bombarded on Facebook alone just because of all the talk about it, of course, is the abortion issue. In this calendar year, there's been 8 different states that have passed new laws related to abortion. And there's a lot of stuff going around about this. The most restrictive one would be in Alabama, which makes no exceptions. It basically bans abortion in all instances. Now, one of the misnomers that's getting pushed around that isn't true, but isn't particularly helpful, and none of these laws make abortion a crime from the standpoint of the mother. So the mother can't be charged with anything for having an abortion. And I know I've heard the arguments already this past week or two. Well, that's inconsistent. If you're a pro-lifer, you can't. You know, if you think that abortion is murder, then the mother would be guilty of murder. Yes, however, you have to separate what is prudent morally and what is prudent legally. And in the current abortion environment, you can't criminalize a mother having abortion, whether you think it's morally it's okay or not. You can't do it. Now, in some of these laws, they've criminalized it from the standpoint of the doctor performing the abortion. And many of these are what they call a heartbeat bill. So they start at around 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, Ohio are all 6-week bills, I believe. Missouri is an eight-week bill. And the less restrictive ones that have been passed in the last year, Arkansas and Utah, and I don't know many of the details about those. And just so I give proper attribution, some of this information that I'm citing is coming from the New York Times, an article, and I don't know how to pronounce your name, but an article by K.K. Rebecca Lai, I believe it's pronounced, L-A-I. So I want to give attribution there because I'm getting some statistics from this article. But anyhow, getting back to the different variations of the laws, none of these laws are going to hold up currently under Roe v. Wade and other abortion decisions in the Supreme Court. The intent of these laws are, in some cases, are specifically to challenge Roe v. Wade. I think the Alabama law is the best example of that, and I'll tell you why in a second. But I think some of these are maybe have a two-part, position. They would like to challenge Roe versus Wade, but more so they would like to be in place if Roe versus Wade is overturned. They would like to have their law in place, ready to go. And it's where it probably should be. And what I mean by that is, in my opinion, and in a lot of legal opinions, even some pro-choice legal opinions, Roe versus Wade is bad law. Now, it's not bad law morally, although I would say that it is myself personally, but I'm not talking, I'm really not wanting to get into the morality or the pro-choice versus pro-life argument. I'm more talking about the laws that are being passed and why they're being passed and what the strategy is and, not making this a moral argument per se. I mean, I could spend an hour show talking about what I think about the morality of the abortion debate, but this is more about the laws that are being passed. So I think in a lot of cases, these states know that these are going to be challenged in the courts, and they're probably going to lose in the lower courts. And the idea is to get it up to the Supreme Court. And some of the overriding logic is they think this is a pro-life court. Now, I think it's more of a pro-life court than it was a couple of years ago, but I'm a little less, I don't want to use the word optimistic. I'm not trying to take sides in this. I'm a little less, you know, in that same line of thinking. I'm not sure where the Chief Justice is on the abortion issue. I don't know that he's a pro-lifer per se. I also don't know where our latest justice is on this. You know, it's claimed that he's pro-life, but we don't really have a lot of evidence of that yet. I think there's probably 3 to 4 justices that are solidly pro-life. So I don't know that this is as cut and dry as some people on both sides think that it is. But let's get back to that Alabama law, because the reason I think that the main reason for passing it and passing it the way that they did is in order to challenge Roe v. Wade. Now, why is the Alabama law better suited to challenge Roe v. Wade? Well, because they basically made it a complete ban of abortion. There's no heartbeat law, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks. It's from, you know, from conception to birth, no abortions, no exceptions for rape, no exceptions for incest. I don't even think Alabama has an exception for life of the mother, although I don't have the law in front of me, so if I'm wrong on that, I apologize. But it actually doesn't matter in a way to make my point. And the point is, the reason they need this all or nothing law is they want Roe versus Wade overturned on the fact that abortion is not in the Constitution. The 14th Amendment doesn't apply to abortion law. That's their contention. So they want it completely overturned, and they want abortion to be a 10th Amendment issue where the states will decide their own abortion laws, and the state courts can decide if their laws meet muster under their state constitutions. So they want to get this out of federal control. And again, the reason I said that Roe is bad law is because I believe their argument on this, again, not about the morality of abortion, but on whether or not it was proper to legalize abortion by way of the federal Supreme Court. And again, I think the 14th Amendment argument is a weak one at best. It's really not a strong legal argument. And it, again, so that's the reason they had to have an all or nothing law, because what happens is let's take the Georgia law, which is probably the next most restrictive of the new abortion laws. It's a heartbeat law. It's a 6 week heartbeat law, which a lot of the pro-choice people are upset about, because they say, well, you might not even know you're pregnant at 6 weeks. And again, that's a whole nother can of worms we're not going to open today. But what's going to happen is, if, for instance, the Georgia law gets to the Supreme Court, they're going to do what they've done in some other similar abortion cases, and they're going to loosen the ability for states to restrict abortion, but they're not going to overturn Roe versus Wade. The only way Roe versus Wade, in my opinion, legally, or from a legal perspective, I should say, the only way they're going to overturn it is going to be with a law like the Alabama law. Because anywhere where they've already made some concessions, the court will just say, well, we're going to strengthen the ability to restrict it, but we're not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. So that's the strategy that I think Alabama is taking here, because almost all pro-life people have really given in on the concession to rape and incest. And again, that's more of a societal concession. Morally, they still believe that abortion is wrong all the time, but they're willing to make the life of the mother concession. They're willing to make the rape and incest concession. And so I don't believe even the people that passed the Alabama law really want a all-out ban on abortion. Now, again, they came short of criminalizing it, at least from the mother's standpoint. But I think this is more than even most pro-lifers would want. But again, the reason for it is they intend for this to end up in the Supreme Court. And so I know we'll all be watching that closely. And again, I'm talking to this strictly from a news and a legal perspective, and not getting into anything about the morality of abortion or you know, the pro-life versus pro-choice. I'm seeing a lot of stupid arguments, really on both sides of the issue. What it really comes down to, it's a moral argument. You can leave out science, because science more and more backs up the pro-life argument, when for years the pro-choicers would use it as, you know, one of the clubs they would wield. So as the facts get clearer and clearer, this really becomes an issue of morality and whose morality that we're going to go with in this country. So again, none of this is an argument in morality, but more so just kind of an interesting observation of where this is all going. And it'll be really interesting to see how this all works out when it makes its way through the courts. So that's all the time I've got for this break. We will take a break here and be back with more Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. President Trump announced a deal with Canada and Mexico today that would scrap major tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. The agreement ends a simmering trade dispute that began when the president imposed tariffs on imported goods in the name of national security. By a vote of 110 to 44 today, Missouri's Republican-led House passed sweeping legislation designed to survive court challenges that would ban abortions at 8 weeks of pregnancy. If enacted, the ban would be among the most restrictive in the U.S., includes exceptions for medical emergencies, but not for pregnancies caused by rape or incest. Doctors would face 5 to 15 years in prison for violating the 8-week cutoff. Women who receive abortions would not be prosecuted. Republican Governor Mike Parson is expected to sign the bill. An Ohio State University dealing with a doctor who reportedly abused students for over 20 years.
Bringing you Rogue River's weather forecast at the top of every hour, this is meteorologist Ann Holliday with 94.3 The Bridge.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And now joining me in the studio, Hunter Arnsdorf. He's got a couple weeks left with me here, and so we're going to take full advantage of having him here. Hunter, welcome back to Rogue Talk.
Thank you, Jeff.
So we've got all kinds of things going on at the high school. Of course, with the end of the school year coming, that's to be to be expected. School gets pretty busy when it gets to the end of the school year, doesn't it?
It definitely does.
Yeah, you graduated last year, and I'm sure probably the month of May and the early part of June got pretty busy for you.
It definitely did. There's just a bunch of things going on at once.
So we've got a few of those things to look at as it relates to Rogue River Junior Senior High School. And the first one I wanted to take a look at is there were 16 new students inducted into the National Honor Society. And I've got that list here. And if I mispronounce any names, I apologize, but we'll try and get these right. So new inductees into the National Honor Society from Rogue River High School: Anna Howard, Caden Kramer, John Wynn Ayers, Amy Barnwell, James Price, Gabe Tambellini, Danny Herrinks, Michaela Harris, Jaliana Palos, Melissa O'Donnell, Savannah Talley, Matthew Croy, Carly Ledoux, Brianna Ruiz, Presley Tiger, and Madison McCown. And so a big congratulations to all of those new members, and a lot of names we recognize. I see quite a few FFA members on that list, and I see a few of our athletes on the list. I also see one of our Miss Rogue River contestants this year on that list. So not surprising, you know, the kids that are going to make it into National Honor Society are usually the ones that are involved in sports and clubs and all those things, and they keep their schedules pretty busy. And so a big congratulations to all of those students. So I mentioned the Miss Rogue River program. That happened on the Saturday after our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. That was on Saturday, May the 4th. And that was a fun evening. Of course, I was the MC at that event. I got to wear my new tuxedo for the first time. I replaced my old one, got one with a little more of a modern look to it, a little cut for today and not for the 90s. And my other tuxedo wasn't mine in the 90s, but it definitely needed an update. So I got to have the premier event for that. But the most important thing that night was, of course, we crowned a new Miss Rogue River and her court. And, of course, Miss Rogue River is Siobhan Kelly. So congratulations, Siobhan, for winning Miss Rogue River. And her court, first runner-up, Kaya Roper. And second runner-up, Brianna Ruiz. And, of course, Brianna was one of the names we mentioned there for the National Honor Society. So congratulations, girls, on a great year of preparation and a wonderful pageant. And I can't wait. I'm looking so forward to next year. Should be a ton of fun, as it always is. So we've covered National Honor Society. We've covered the Miss Rogue River. The next thing moves us over to the sports, and I've got a couple of things, and then Hunter's going to help me with a few more. Equestrian, we haven't talked about in a while. They had their third district meet, and then they also had their state meet. And taking a look at the final district meet, Carly Ledoux, another name we mentioned from the National Honor Society, she was first in dressage. This was at the third district meet, or the third and final district meet. And she was also first in saddle seat. So big congratulations to Carly for that. And then along with her teammate Bretta Davis and a couple of riders from Illinois Valley, they teamed up to finish third in the hand obstacle relay. And so after the district meet, that you get the end of year district results, and the team was third for small schools. Bretta and Carly got the bronze medal in hand obstacle relay. Carly got the silver medal in dressage and the bronze medal in saddle seat. And so that set them up for the state competition. Carly, with her two first place finishes in the district meet, she competed at the state level in those two events. She finished 10th in the state in dressage, 19th in the state in saddle seat, and then again teaming up with Bretta and their two teammates from Illinois Valley, they finished 21st in hand obstacle relay at the state meet. So a big congratulations to the Rogue River Equestrian team. And they had another great season. They keep improving year in and year out, and we're so happy to be able to recognize them on Rogue Talk. So let's move over to track and field. And again, Hunter here to help me with that. The track and field team is currently, there's a few of the members at least, are at the state meet right now. And in fact, we'll try and get a live look in from the state meet at the end of the show. But the district meet is how you get into the state meet. And we've got some results from that district meet. And starting with the girls' results, Hunter, what do you got for us?
I got with the women or girls. I got for the prelims for the 100 meters. I got Erica Hansen got fifth. Jonathan Ayers got sixth. Bella Pelez, 18th.
Bella Paez.
Paez. My bad.
That's all right.
Okay, and that's for the prelims. Finals, I got Jonathan Ayers got fourth. Erica Hansen got sixth.
That was the finals in the 100 meters.
Yes.
Okay.
For the 200 meter prelims, got seventh for Juliana Palos, 14th for Bella
Paez.
And then for the 200 meter finals, I got 5th for Juliana Palos.
So Juliana was what place in the finals?
She got 5th.
She got 5th. Okay, so what was our next event?
The 400 meters. The prelims, 400 meter prelims, got Madison Bless got 7th. For the 400-meter finals, Madison Bleth also got a fifth-place finish.
So fifth place, seventh in the prelims. Now, these prelims are overall. We don't have the heat. I don't have the heat results here. So these are their overall results. A lot of cases, if you're running heats, if you know you're locked into a finals position, you may not push it as hard at the end of a race. So that's why some of these people, like in this instance, we were talking about
Madison Bless.
She finished seventh overall in the prelims, but she got a fifth place finish in the finals. So a lot of times that can be what happens. And when I give you the boys' results, we're going to see that same kind of thing a couple of times. So what was our next event for the girls?
That'll be the 800. They had no prelims, so they only did the finals. And Madison Bless entered again with a fourth place finish.
Fourth place. Wow, that's excellent. So what was the next event?
The 1500 meters. They had no prelims, so it's only the finals, and Juliana Palos got 11th place finish.
Okay, and what was next?
The 100-meter hurdles prelims, there was Erica Hansen got 6th, and in the 100-meter hurdles finals, Erica Hansen got a 5th place.
Yeah, there again, she was 6th overall by way of her time in the prelims, but she finished 5th. So that's a good showing there for Erica. What was next?
The 4x100 relay finals. And we placed second with Madison Bless, Erica Hansen, Juliana Palos, and Jonathan Ayers.
That was the 4x100, and that team finished second, you said?
Yes.
So that qualified them for the state meet, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. We're going to talk about the state meet at the end of the show. It's going on right now. In fact, we may have some javelin results for you from the boys' side. That might be the only results we get for you, but we'll give you the schedule of events. They're competing over the next 2 days. And was there any other events?
Yes, we got javelin. They had no prelims, so it was only finals. And Crystal
McLaughlin?
Yeah, McLaughlin got 8th. Brooklyn Erspinger got 21st. And Layla
Braga?
Braga got 22nd. So we had three contestants.
Okay. And what was our next event for the girls?
The long jump finals. We got third place for Joan Winares, sixth for Erica Hansen for the long jump finals.
So Joan, when he got third, just missed making the state meet in the long jump. And was that it for the girls?
One last one with the triple jump. They had no prelims. It's only finals. And Joan Winares got a first place finish.
So Joan made it to state with a win at districts in the triple jump. So she will be at state. Well, excellent. Well, I've got the boys' results in front of me here, and let's go through those. In the 100 meters, and I'm going to do this by event and then by athlete. So in the 100 meters, Josiah Purrier was the fifth best time in the prelims, and he finished third in the final, so he just missed the state meet by one position. And Jaewon Lee was 17th in the prelims, did not run in the final. 200 meters, Josiah Purrier, fifth best time in the prelims, and he finished fifth in the finals. And also in the 200 meter, Carson Smith was the eighth best time in the prelims, but he finished one position ahead of Josiah with a fourth place finish in the finals. At 400 meters, Grant Fehrenbacher, 13th best time in the prelims, and Davi Shoshnik, sorry, Davi. Davi's our exchange student, and I haven't gotten to actually meet Davi, but when I do, I'm going to ask him how to pronounce his last name properly. So Davi Shoshnik was 15th in the prelims, and Grant and Davi did not run in the final. 800 meters, there was no prelims. Jonah Maris was 13th in the 800 meters. Jonah was also 11th in the 1,500 meters. And in the 3,000 meters, a ninth place finish for Jonah Maris. So Jonah doing triple duty there, running the 800, 15, and 3,000. That's a tough three races to run. Even over the course of 2 days, that's a lot of running. So congrats to Jonah. Of course, the Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron Smith, probably would have been in two of those events had he not been injured, the 1,500 and the 3,000. And just going by, you know, personal bests and the records of his times, he would have had a shot at state in the 1,500. But in the 3,000, he probably would have won that at districts and would have been on to the state again as he was last year, making the state meet at the 3A level last year. In the 3,000, but unfortunately, an early season knee injury has had him out the rest of the season, and so didn't make it this year. But our first state qualifier on the boys' side, the 110-meter hurdles, Aiden Norris, with a first-place finish at the districts, so he will be competing at state. The 4x100 team also made it to the state finals. They were second at districts, and that team consisted of Diego Agosto, Josiah Purrier, Carson Smith, and Aiden Norris. And again, they will be competing at the state track and field meet in the 4x100 relay. Davi also competed in discus, and he was in a tie for 20th in the discus. Another state qualifier, Carson Smith, was first at districts in javelin, and he's competing today in the javelin event. And again, at the end of the show, we'll take a live look at the OSAA results and see how he's doing there. Grant Fehrenbacher competed in the pole vault, and he finished seventh. And then on to more state qualifiers. Long jump, Aiden Norris was first, Carson Smith was second, so they both qualified for state in the long jump. Davi Shoshnik also competed, he was 17th. And finally, the triple jump, Aiden Norris also qualified for the state competition with a first place finish in the districts in the triple jump. And so quite a few state qualifiers for the Chieftains. We had some state qualifiers for equestrian. We had state qualifiers for track and field. Been a pretty good spring season for the Chieftains. And another state qualifier to talk about, let's move to another sport, and that would be the sport of golf. Evan Mingerhausen, after the first day of competition, or the first round of competition, Evan was in a three-way tie for first at the state golf tournament, and he ended up finishing four shots behind the leader and fourth place. So a fourth place finish at state for Evan Mingerhausen in golf. And of course, last year at this time, we were talking about a big controversy at the state, I believe it was the state golf tournament. And we had Joe LaFever in here at the time, and you can go back and listen to that interview if you go to our website, 943thebridge.com, click on the audio tab, click on Rogue Talk, and find your way to last year's show about this time. I don't have the date right in front of me, but the interview with Joe LaFever, and that was quite an interesting controversy where the teams were instructed to hit from the wrong tees and then were penalized for hitting from those wrong tees. In fact, they were disqualified. It only happened at one hole, and there was a chance. There really was a chance for the officials to fix it right there and then and not have to disqualify a team that didn't shoot at the wrong tees by their own mistake, but they were told by one of the course officials to shoot from those tees. And again, not only were they misinformed by the course official, but there was a chance for that problem to be taken care of right away, and it wasn't. And unfortunately, it resulted in the disqualification of the Rogue River Chieftains in last year's tournament. And that was quite a disappointment. And it was, again, it's a great interview. Joe is a stand-up guy, and it was a fun interview for me. And he was, you know, gave us the facts, and he tried to keep the emotion out of it. And I think he did a really good job of that. So go back and check that interview out. That was a fun one. So that was it for all the Chieftain sports, except Hunter, you've got the final few games for baseball and softball. What do you got for us on that?
Okay, so the first one I have was on the 3rd of this month. There was Rogue River at Lakeview. They lost their first game 1-2, and then they also lost the second game 0-12. Then the next one was on...
Now, which sport are we talking about here?
Baseball.
Baseball. Okay, this is baseball results.
Okay, the next game was on the 7th. We beat Lost River 9-0. I believe that was a no-hitter.
That was Lost River. No, that one wasn't the no-hitter. The no-hitter was back against North Lake. That was previously. These are the latest results, but I'll have to see if I have the scoring on that one. We've had a one-hitter recently, and that may have been that game. But continue to give us the results, and I'll see if I can look that up.
The next one was against Bonanza. We won that one 10-9. That was on the 10th. Then game two, that was a doubleheader. We won also with 13-7. And the next one was on the 13th versus Triad. We played a doubleheader as well. We lost 2-0.
Okay, now this is actually a combination team. It's Hosanna Christian combined with Triad. And so, yeah, this was, and these games, I'll let you get back to that, but these games were a must win for the Chieftains. They had a chance to get into the playoffs, but they needed to sweep the doubleheader with Hosanna Christian, and go ahead and give those results.
The first, we had a doubleheader. The first one we lost 0-2. The second one we lost as well, 1-10. That's for baseball. Now for the softball side, we played against Lakeview, and that was on the 7th. We lost 0-10. Then the next one we played was on the 4th. We played also against Lakeview. We lost that 4-8. Then we played against Lost River on the 7th. We lost 12-13. Then we lost, or we played on the 11th versus Bonanza. We won that 4-1. Then to game two, we lost that 2-14.
Yep. So. Yeah, so that was it's been a pretty good season for baseball and softball. They both came up short of getting into the playoffs. Again, the Hosanna Christian games were important games. We had the first game here on the Bridge, and unfortunately they lost that first game, and they went on to lose the second game as well, but they needed to sweep, so once they had lost the first game, their season was basically over, at least advancing into the playoffs. It was an up and down season for both the teams. Now the doubleheader against Bonanza, you got to join me on those broadcasts. What did you think about those games?
I loved it. I just loved being there, just seeing the field for the first time. It looked pretty cool.
And what did you think of the Chieftain team? How did you think they performed that day?
I thought they performed really good, except for they had a slow start. Gave up a couple hits and really got hit a lot the first game, allowing us to get a lot of runs.
Yeah, now when he says really got hit a lot, he means literally there was several hit by pitches in that game, and the Chieftains took full advantage of it. So I went back to the Lost River game that you were talking about, the 9-0 win for the Chieftains, and it was a one hitter. Nick Motsuit gave up one hit in that game. Derek Nelson came in and threw one pitch. He threw one pitch. The game was over. And again, the hit was an infield single. It very easily could have been scored as an error. I believe the official scorekeeper also scored it as a hit. So it was a one hitter one batter short of a complete game one hitter for Nick Motsuit. Like I said, Derek Nelson came in, threw one pitch, got the final out in that one. And then I believe, let's take a look in the games. Well, I lost it here. So anyhow, but the Bonanza games, there was the pitching again was really, really good. And in fact, Nick Motsuit didn't pitch at all that day. They were trying to keep him rested up because they knew that they would need him against the much stronger Hosanna Christian team. And he pitched a great game in that first game against Hosanna Christian. I believe it was another one hitter for him. I'm trying to bring up those results now. Taking a look at the pitching, he had 12 strikeouts. No, he gave up in that first game. He gave up three hits, two runs on three hits. None of those runs were earned, and he had 12 strikeouts. And I think that's his second or third game. I think it's his third game, at least games that we've had here on the Bridge, where he had 12 strikeouts or more. So pretty good season for the Chieftains. They came up a little short of what they were expecting. They wanted to make it into the state playoffs again, but they didn't quite get that done. But all in all, it's been a great spring for Chieftain sports, and I know you've enjoyed covering it all spring long, Hunter.
I loved it. It was just awesome just being there, seeing the whole team. Just being at Rogue River was just amazing.
Yep, so we're going to have to take a quick break, but we will come back and talk a little bit more about Chieftain sports.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRongstra. Mexico's National Chamber of the Iron and Steel Industry is congratulating the country's officials on the agreement reached with the United States on ending steel and aluminum tariffs. The chamber considers the deal a strong and very positive step for industry in the entire region, adding it's a great advance toward ratifying the new trade deal between Mexico, the United States, and Canada. Missouri's Republican-led House on today passed sweeping legislation designed to survive a court challenge which would ban abortions at 8 weeks of pregnancy. If enacted, the ban would be among the most restrictive in the U.S. Republican Governor Mike Parson is pledging to sign the bill. And a former Falmouth, Maine elementary school teacher is contending the school district declined to renew her contract because she took 3 breaks a day to pump breast milk for her baby. She's suing in federal court. This is SRN News.
Where the rooster crows. 94.3, The Bridge.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N.
No. Just type the numbers. 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And so let's take a look at the state track and field schedule of events. As I mentioned, the boys javelin for the 2A, which has competing Carson Smith for the Chieftains, that has been completed. And I have the results. Carson did not get off as good a throws as he's had this season and finished 12th at the state meet, only able to throw 106 feet 4 inches, and he has thrown quite a bit farther than that this season. So disappointing day, I think, for Carson in that, but he's got some other events to go. He's got the long jump, and he's also part of the 4x100 team. And let's go back to the schedule before we run out of time. So in today's, for the Chieftains, just trying to see the... I'm not seeing any other events except for Aiden Norris. I believe the hurdles are today. I'm trying to quickly scan these. Unfortunately, I don't have them highlighted. But the 100-meter hurdles, I believe, are around 4:30. There we go. The 2A 110-meter hurdles, that'll be at 4:30. There's two heats at 4:30 and 4:34. But a lot of stuff going on tomorrow. And again, let's just take a look. I don't have all of the times for you, but the state qualifiers that'll be competing today and tomorrow, the 4x100 teams for both the boys and the girls compete. Aiden Norris is competing in the 110 hurdles. And also the long jump. And John Wynn Ayers competing in the triple jump. She's also part of the 4x100 team competing. And so, you know, great. Last year, the Chieftains only sent two qualifiers to the state meet. This year, they sent a handful, including both of the 4x100 teams. That's very impressive for the Chieftains. Well, Hunter, thanks for helping me again today.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
And thank you all for joining us today on Rogue Talk. Hope you enjoyed the show. But now, be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.